Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, both for our radio audience as well as those tuning in online. For those joining us on the radio side, we have another great hour coming up for you guys. Author Frankie Y. Bailey is back with us today. We're going to talk to her not only about her new book just released this month, What the Fly Saw, but also what it's been like for her to combine not only mystery, but also the future in her newest book as well. At the bottom of the hour for our radio audience, we'll be speaking to Carolyn Randall Williams. She also is making her first appearance on our program. She has a new cookbook out that she co-wrote with her mother, Alice Randall. It's called Soul Food Love, Healthy Recipes Inspired by 100 Years of Cooking in a Black Family. We'll talk to Carolyn not only about what it was like for her to work on the project with her mother, but also what it's been like for her to be able to share some great recipes as well. Again, for our radio audience, another great hour coming up for you guys. For those joining us online, we have two great segments for you. As I said, though, everything is kicking off with Frankie Y. Bailey back on our program today. Frankie, hello to you, and welcome back to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, the pleasure's definitely all mine. I was just saying to you before we went live here, Frankie, really enjoyed the new book, What the Fly Saw, and we'll be telling our listeners a little bit later how they can get it for themselves, but what has it been like for you, Frankie? I mean, the last time you and I spoke, of course, you know, we were discussing, you know, your last book, The Red Queen Dies. What has it been like for you to see the way that readers have not only gravitated to the characters, but also looked forward to the new book?
Well, you know, I was really concerned when I started to write it because it's a completely new experience for me. I'm a crime historian by training. You know, I'm a criminal justice professor, and I do crime and mass media and crime history. And so my first series with Lizzie Stewart, she's actually a crime historian. And that series is now set in the recent past, in 2004. And in this new series with Hannah McCabe, I'm leaping into the near future, 2019 in the first book, 2020 in the second. And I really wanted to do that because I'm writing about a place where I live. I wanted to be far enough in the future where there would be some distance, and also I needed to create this alternate universe. So I'm doing two things. And so, you know, the whole challenge of figuring out what would be happening in the future, I needed to start there when I decided it was going to be there. And so I joined the Rural Future Society, and I started to read books about future scenarios and predictions. And I was crossing my fingers because this is genre blending where I'm bringing together mystery and near future. And I wanted to keep my mystery readers, but at the same time make them comfortable with that setting. So I've been really pleased, you know, that people have been receptive to it.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's so interesting to me because, you know, if the truth be told, I mean, it's not that far off.
No, no. You know, and what's going to happen is that in series time, you know, I write so slowly. If the series actually went on for, like, 5 more books, I would probably be writing a series that in the series is set in the near future but would actually be in the present time, because so it would be like a 2022 book, and it would be coming out like 2017 or something.
Well, you know, and the only reason I bring that up, Frankie, about it not being too far in the future is that it is not too far-fetched, you know, the things that McCabe is having to deal with, as well as, of course, you know, the world as it exists. But there are some things that are definitely, you know, commonplace that we find in McCabe's world as well as in ours, and that is, of course, the role of forensics, you know, when it comes to being able to try to solve, you know, or piece together what has happened, especially if there's been some kind of criminal activity. But also, of course, just being human. I mean, was that important for you as well, not to lose the, you know, the human qualities as you were able to kind of take us through this new book?
Yeah, I like sci-fi. I love, you know, watching sci-fi movies, but I didn't want to write science fiction where I was leaping too far. I wanted to be in the near future. That was really my goal, because I wanted to be able to talk about things that are happening now, but that in a few years we might be at the tipping point. For example, like climate change. where in the first book, you know, the Red Queen dies. It's like in the 80s in, you know, late October. And in this book, there's a blizzard. And not to say that this is the first time we've had a blizzard like this one. There was a blizzard in 1888 that was sort of the inspiration for this. But, you know, for other things like surveillance, for example, right now, you can in Albany, you know, here in Albany, New York, when we drive around, you know, there are cameras every place, and you're always on camera. And that's true of many cities now, that, you know, the surveillance systems are in place, and it helps with law enforcement, with, you know, detecting crime, seeing criminals in action. But it also means that you're dealing, as I talk about in my mass media class, with that whole issue of surveillance and privacy issues. And so the technology is a blessing, but it can also be a curse, depending on who's using it. But in this case, you know, with the crime scene investigations, you know, the surveillance system and what the flight saw has been knocked out because of the blizzard, and so they're dealing with the lack of surveillance there. But then later on in the book, it turns out to be really useful. And things, you know, like what happens when you're dealing with an old infrastructure where you have, you know, a blizzard and freezing and pipes begin to break. Here in Albany and in a lot of cities, we have pipes going back to the 19th century, and so you get that, you know, freezing and then thaw, and then you get the water main breaks. Mm-hmm. So things like that that are really happening, but that I'm thinking about where is it going to be in a few years in terms of that. But I have to say, I'm dealing with an alternate universe. This is not the Albany that I live in. There's a twist in the series that makes it an alternate universe.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and I think the other great thing about it too, you know, and I thought about this even as I was reading the book. You know, we have all heard that saying, "I'd love to be a fly on the wall." And you know, and I, you know, and I think, you know, the interesting thing is to be able to kind of take us into these events, but also with McCabe, you and this is why I mentioned earlier, Frankie, about the human aspect, because you also are able to show that even in spite of the work that McCabe does, that Hannah McCabe does, that she is still human. She deals with things like all of us doing, even when it comes to things in her own personal life. Was it also important for you to make her someone that we could feel for and relate to?
Yeah, she's a complex character, and I have to say, as with many writers, when we start a series, you're getting to know the character as you go along, and the character reveals herself or himself. But I started out knowing there was an important incident in McKay's life when she was 9 years old, and you know, this is something that comes up in the first book, but she ends up killing a burglar who breaks into the family's home, and her brother's, he's in a wheelchair now because of that incident. He's a brilliant scientist, so he's managed to, you know, come up with these high-tech things, but that's something that she lives with, you know. Was she somehow responsible for what happened to her brother, and also the fact that she killed someone? And when I think about why she became a police officer, it's because of this search for trying to make sense of this, trying to find justice, to bring justice. And so what I want to have in this book is something that's true of many police officers in real life, that they go about doing their job, and most of them do it to the best of their ability, and they have to deal with some really bad things that happen. But at the same time, because they're human, they're responding to those not only in terms of their professional training, but in terms of their personal biographies.
Right. Exactly, and I think that is, again, what makes her so relatable. For those who are just tuning in, either on the radio dial or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. I'm welcoming back author Frankie Y. Bailey to our program. She's the author of the book that we discussed last time she was on, The Red Queen Dies. This year, she has a brand new book, What the Fly Saw, and that's what we've been talking about, a feature, of course, the character, the detective, Hannah McCabe. So, you know, let's get a little bit more into the actual, you know, I think the mystery of this book, and that is that you kind of, you know, are able to take us everywhere, both is, you know, into the church as well as into a sex club. I mean, kind of runs the gamut.
I tried to be respectful of both.
Yeah. You know, so how much fun was that for you as a storyteller, though, to kind of give us those two extremes of each other and to kind of be able to bring out the real people in both?
Well, I have to say about the sex club, we hear about it rather than actually going into it.
Yeah.
It's a virtual reality avatars, and this becomes, you know, something that's discussed. But you know, the whole issue of the church, the mega church thing, I was really interested in you know, the whole issue of religion, and because of the alternate universe. In 2012 in this series, there's a UFO sighting. The UFO appears near Las Vegas, you know, jet scramble, and it disappears in a blaze of, you know, light and it's never seen again, and now it's, you see, I guess 8 years later at this point. And so it's sort of like, how do people in this alternate universe go along? People are very much like people in our world. How do they go along after this event? How do they respond to the anxiety caused by not really knowing what's going to happen next? It's sort of like, you know, in some ways, you know, 9/11 in terms of how we cope with something that is unbelievable, that completely shatters our sense of security, and then what do we do? But here, it's, you know, there's something out there, we think, but we don't really know what it is and when it might come back. And so, you know, in the very first chapter, I introduced those space zombies, the kids who have sort of dropped out. They're like the 2019, 2020 version of hippies, and they're using drugs, and they drop out, and, you know, they have completely, you know, space out in terms of, pardon the pun, in terms of what they're doing. And then we got the survivalists. And then I thought there would be people who would be drawn to religion, you know, more than usual in terms of looking at that as a way of dealing with anxiety. But then I had the psychiatrist, the counselor for the church, say, even with the church, you know, they're feeling this deep anxiety that people are trying to cope with. So that's one of the things that sort of is overarching theme in the series, this anxiety. And it's not something, it's something that, you know, we can understand very easily. Even in 2015, most of us go around with this, you know, this sort of lurking anxiety, and every time we turn on the news, we're wondering what's happened now, you know. So, so it's something I wanted to expand on here, and I thought using the church would be one way of doing that.
Yeah, and I think that that is the interesting thing. You know, and I think, you know, also there is, you know, the belief system. And I think, you know, there, you know, even you address, you know, individuals, you know, thinking about consulting mediums. And, I mean, there are a lot of different things that you were different layers you were able to, you know, to bring up in this book, Frankie. I think that really ties into not only, of course, how people do cope with what's going on around them, but also, of course, where people look to, you know, for answers. Do you think that is another thing that kind of makes this book, you know, again, you know, so relevant, you know, for our time, even though, again, it is set, you know, a little bit in the future, that how people even today, you know, are looking for something, they're looking for answers, and it's really about the way that they go about it.
Yeah, I hope it does. But, you know, I have to say about the medium, I actually, that was a reference back to the history of New York State and Albany history. In the 19th century, there was this whole real movement around spiritualism, and there are two sisters, the Fox sisters, who are mediums, actually three of them, but the two of them were most famous, and they actually ended up coming to Albany at one point, as they did to other places, you know, where they were very well known, and they were famous mediums, and Houdini was actually in Albany. He was one of those debunkers who said, you know, this is, you know, a complete hoax, you know. And, so I wanted to bring that bit of Albany history and that bit of background and tie it to the present, in the sense that people still turn to spiritualism and mediums, and you know, this is one way of trying to understand something that most of us can't understand. You know, the whole concept of life and what happens after life in terms of death. And so this medium is actually introduced into the story by an 85-year-old woman, a character I really enjoy creating. She's, you know, fabulous. And she is having a celebration of life. And, you know, she says to my victim, Kevin Novak, who's a funeral director, that when you're 85 years old, you sort of look around for anything that might give you comfort or some, you know, sense that, you know, there's something after life in terms of how you relate to death. And, you know, the concept of a celebration of life is becoming more and more common, that people, rather than waiting until they're dead and they're not there to enjoy the wonderful things people are saying about them, are finding, you know, doing their own parties for themselves and inviting people in instead of celebrating life. And so, yeah, that was something that came out of my research on, you know, funerals and death and funeral directors. I did a lot of research on that as I was thinking about this. But, yeah, I wanted it to be something that people could relate to on a lot of levels, about the search for meaning and how we cope with things like guilt and remorse. And so there's this theme of guilt also running through the book.
Yeah, and there is. And I think, too, you know, and, you know, we had mentioned, or you mentioned, I think, Frankie, about the zombies. The interesting parallel that I thought about, it's so funny, was that, you know, the whole conversation about immigrants, and, you know, and how people just, you know, seem to just be there, and how they are, you know, how they are either accepted, you know, or not, you know, and how some welcoming them and some do not. You know, I think it's so interesting how you're able to have conversations about real things, you know, as you're discussing and enjoying a great book. Is that one of the joys you have as a storyteller, of being able to do that, to both entertain as well as to get the reader to think a little bit?
Yeah, that's really one of the reasons that I started out as an English and psychology major, so it sort of came full circle with this. But as a criminal justice professor, you know, criminal justice scholar writing for academics and people who read the journals and our academic books, I talk to an audience like myself, and so I really want to speak to a broader or wider audience and talk about the things that I study and think about a lot. You know, I teach a graduate course on race and crime, so you know, every semester when I teach this course, we're moving from the colonial period to the present, looking at immigration and you know these waves of people coming in and some being accepted and some not, and how this changes in the 19th and early 20th century, and then what happens with the Mexican-Americans, and you know, this constant wave of people coming in and you know, various people responding to them in different ways. And with my Howard Miller, my third-party candidate, I was sure, you know, I think, you know, in the near future that immigration is still going to be one of those issues. It's, you know, always there's going to be some issue about newcomers and how they fit in. And so I thought to have this third-party candidate who's running for president, this gives me a way of getting into that discussion as well, because he is opposed to immigration and he's very concerned about the border. And so you get that theme sort of carrying through in terms of the comments he's making. And I have my news reader, you know, commenting about what he's saying out as he's out on the stop for you know, president. So, yeah, I wanted to really get into some of those issues. But, you know, they're the subtext, they're the you know, backstory for this setting. So it's not something that's, you know, the murder mystery is going on and then all these things are going on around it.
Exactly. And I think that is it, and I think that is the interesting thing. Even McCabe says to Baxter at the funeral that's in the book, you know, that, you know, even she wishes that you could fast forward sometime because it seems as though that scene is always the same. You know, that funeral scene was one that I thought about a couple of times, Frankie, because, you know, there are the words, you know, that were said by Wyatt there that I think everyone kind of goes through. You know, and that is, you know, how did God allow something like this to happen, you know, and, you know, where was God's mercy? The questions, you know, was that also important for you, too, to show the real aspect of, at the end of the day, there was a life loss because McCabe even, you know, as she was sitting there listening, she thought about a previous funeral she'd been to not too long ago, you know, of someone who had been killed, you know, to keep them from possibly talking, not talking, but possibly talking, and how it just seemed to always be the same thing. What was that like for you to kind of go there with that?
Yeah, that comment, that thought she had was a reference back to the funeral in The Red Queen Dies, because I thought that would still be very much on her mind because she was unable to save this woman, you know, this old woman who, you know, just, you know, wanted to protect yourself by not talking. But, yeah, I grew up in a Baptist church in Virginia, and so I have a lot of experiences, you know, of going to funerals and, you know, that concept of a good funeral where you what sounds odd, but you know what I'm talking about, where
right.
You go and, you know, people are sitting there and the minister tries to bring you to a place where you're thinking about life and mortality, but that you're taking away some hope, something. You know, what can you cling to in this moment when, you know, this loss of life, this fairly young man who's been a victim and he's a good father and a good husband, and how do you make sense of this? And knowing that you can't really make sense of some things, but that you have to try to accept that there's something to come out of this, some hope, something that you can hold on to and use as a way of making things better, or at least surviving what's happened.
Exactly. And I think, and what a great thing to be able to do, for sure. Again, everyone, you're listening to Conversations Live. I'm speaking with author Frankie Y. Bailey today. We're talking to her not only about the experience of seeing the response to her new book, what the fly saw, but also what it's been like for her to bring these characters to readers as well. So for you, I mean, and you even alluded to about the way you write earlier, Frankie, and, you know, it is, I think it's great that because you are able to be so thorough. I think that's the reason why.
I love doing research.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, and I think that's the thing. Is that kind of the big payoff for you to kind of see all of it come together?
Yeah, I have to. It's after the first draft. The first draft is really painful. I think many writers will say this. I write fairly slowly because I have to rewrite and rewrite the first 50 pages. It's like a warm-up exercise until I get the. It's like writing music. You sort of have to begin to hear the tones, the sounds, and people talking to each other. And so I rewrite those 50 pages over and over again. I have to have the title. I have to have the characters' names. And then there's the sagging middle where you have to make something, you know, pick it up and get it going again. And so that first draft is really painful, but I love revising, and I love the research leading up to the writing. So for the avatars, you know, even though there's a very brief reference in the book, you know, there are several, couple of scenes, but I actually went out to Stanford University and went to a lab that, you know, they have a wonderful lab, virtual reality lab. It's open to the public, and so I just wanted to get some sense of what that would be like, the closest I could come, you know, not actually being able to experience virtual reality in 2020. And so I love that kind of research, but once I get past the first draft, then, yeah, I really begin to enjoy the book. But the first draft is murder.
Yeah. One of the ways that you're able to stay connected with your readers, as we even were doing and we were telling people about this segment, is through social media. I mean, you know, again, that is one thing that 10 years ago, I don't think people would have imagined that in real time we'd be able to connect the way that we are. I mean, what has that part of the experience been like for you?
I have to say, you know, I've been writing and as an academic, and so then I was, you know, my first series is with a small independent press, and so now the series is with St. Martin's, and, you know, the whole use of social media, when you're sitting in your office all day in a school of criminal justice, you're not thinking a whole lot about, you know, Twitter and sending tweets out and the social media thing. And so I've had to really get myself into it, but I'm really beginning to find Twitter really interesting. I haven't quite gotten there yet on Facebook because I don't remember to go back and check my Facebook page and things like that, but I'm really beginning to appreciate what Twitter can do in terms of making contact with people. And, you know, I really enjoy that, but then I have to remember that I want to not get myself into trouble on Twitter. So I think about what I'm saying, which is good advice for everyone. You think about what you're about to set out.
Exactly. I totally agree with that. And I think it's a great thing for all of us to do. And, you know, we say on this program all the time, when used responsibly, the internet can be an amazing thing. You just have to remember to do that part, to use it responsibly for sure. Well, we definitely have been telling people about this book and this conversation through social media, Frankie. It is a great read. I think entertaining as well as, I think, thoughtful. And that's what I've come to expect.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I thought that ever since I read The Red Queen Dies, and definitely I think with this book it really showed itself. Again, Frankie Y. Bailey has been our guest today. What the Fly Saw is the title of her book we've been discussing. You know, Frankie, we mentioned social media. We'll tell our listeners how they can find you there, but where would you like to send them as far as finding out more information about you and what's to come?
Oh, well, I'd like to send them to my website. That's www.frankieybailey.com. And I want to mention that I'm about to, in April, launch a series of blog posts on my website about police officers in popular culture, African-American police officers in popular culture, films and television. I also blog on Type In for Murder every other Friday.
Oh, wow. Okay. So something for us to be able to look forward to. So make sure you guys are staying connected with Frankie. You also can find her on Facebook and Twitter. We actually tagged her handles there with the link to this conversation to make it easy for you guys to be able to find. Frankie, again, congratulations to you. Thank you so much for the time. Last question I have for you, and it's one I've been trying to ask everyone this year because I think everyone, you know, has something to contribute to it, and that is you have been able to definitely find your passion and work that you love. I mean, both not only in writing but also outside of writing. Is that kind of the advice you give for anybody out there about the importance of going for their own passion or dream?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's been a really challenging experience in some ways to have now two full-time careers as your academic, professor, and writer. But I think even when I'm really tired and deadlines looming and all of that, I think that's what really carries you through whatever is happening in your personal life, whatever is going on, if there's something you feel a passion about, some place that you can retreat to and that's your own world and you're involved in doing something that you love, that sort of gets you through everything.
Yeah, totally agree with that. Well, Frankie, thank you so much for the time today. I really appreciate it. And it goes without saying, when the next book releases, we'd love to have you back on.
Oh, thank you so much, and I really enjoyed this conversation. Great questions.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And we thank you, our listeners, for joining us for another great segment of Conversations Live. For our online listeners, we're going to lose you guys. For our radio audience, you guys stay where you are. There's more Conversations Live to come. However, if you came in late and you missed part of the conversation with Frankie, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you guys can catch the replay of this show right after we go off to air. The link is already available on our social media pages at facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to twitter.com/CyrusWeb. Click on that link. You can listen to the show completely for free, and even share it with your friends using the social media buttons you'll find there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music, as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. You all make it a great one.